Okay, with that special intro out of the way, welcome to the HTC Hitting the Canvas Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast, Thursday night here, June 12th. We are back with after our week off. I am hosting today. I am your host, Justin Sirwanka. For the time being, joined by my fellow co-host and HTC writer, Matt Herrick. Matt, how's it going tonight?
I'll put it this way. I don't drink, yet I'm drinking tonight. So that's how today has gone.
Yeah, that sounds almost about you got that. I am sore all over the place from softball last night. So, yeah, it seems like both of us have been having a pretty good last couple of days as far as that goes. We're waiting for our other co-host, Cam, to be joining us at any minute. Hopefully he'll pop on the line here in the next few minutes. So tonight's show, we got a little bit current events talking about. Obviously, the big news today, a bunch of releases coming down from the WWE, something that we haven't really seen. In the last couple of years, we haven't really seen this big of a release day in these last few years. They've happened before, but now it's happened again. And obviously, without being on here last week, we'll kind of track back a little bit from Payback going to where we are now and the recent developments with the Daniel Bryan WWE title situation and obviously the breakup of the Shield. And then after that, we'll get into the top three that we're going to have tonight, which piggybacking off the Seth Rollins heel turn, we'll have our own list of the top three most shocking / surprising heel turns that on our list of wrestling history. So we got a good amount of stuff to get to tonight. As I said, we're going to start current events first, and we'll start with the recent releases today in the WWE. There was, I believe it was 11 total. Nobody really big as far as top talent goes. Lots of lower-tier guys. We had this basically starts with, the guy who seems to have made the cut out of all of these the last few years, but he didn't survive this one, JTG. I made a joke to a friend today that it was the fact that people were tweeting about him on Twitter that the WWE finally realized, hey, this guy's still employed by us, and they decided to release him then. And then kind of, I would say, the most surprising to me, at least, were the releases of Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal from 3MB. To me, I thought 3MB was a good act for what it was. They were a lower-tier, mid-card act, but they were three guys who seemed to embrace their role and what they were doing. And, Drew McIntyre was somebody who Vince McMahon once pegged as the chosen one and the next world champion, and he was now down to doing what he was doing in 3MB, but you watch these guys go out there and perform every night, and they looked like guys who were embracing their role in the company and, just living up their gimmick, having a fun time with it. I thought they were having a nice little mini lower card feud with Los Matadores and El Torito. So those two, I guess, would be the most shocking releases of the day, considering it seemed like they were just on Raw this past Monday. And like I said, they were not prominently featured on TV, but they were on Raw and SmackDown a lot the last few weeks. So those two are the most surprising. Then you have Oksana, who I never really personally saw anything in as far as a diva talent goes. And I'm surprised actually she wasn't released sooner after she almost ended Naomi's career by breaking her orbital bone. And then there's a bunch of guys, Curt Hawkins, Teddy Long, Camacho, Brodus Clay, Yoshitatsu, guys who weren't really used on TV at all. Mark Harris, a referee, and then Evan Bourne, who has been injured and tore his Achilles, I want to say it's at least 18 months ago now, and everybody always thought he would be returning to TV soon, maybe reforming Air Boom with Kofi Kingston or just getting back on TV in general, and that never happened. And with 3 hours of Raw, you think they'd be able to find time for a guy like Evan Bourne, but they didn't, and now he's gone too. So 11 releases today overall, 10 performers, talents, wrestlers, divas, and one referee. I kind of gave my thoughts there on all the guys that went through them. Matt, what about you? Anybody surprising? Anybody you were disappointed to see release? And just what were your thoughts on the releases overall?
I was actually surprised that this didn't happen sooner. Especially, I thought this was going to happen once they killed the brand split. that was the general consensus feeling of, okay, well, all these guys are only going to be featured on one show now, or not one show, on both shows now, so we kind of have to trim the fat, especially when it comes to the lower card, because you have guys who were in the main event now who have to wrestle on the mid card because there's only one world championship. And you look at it, and the one that surprised me most probably is the fact that Heath Slater saw the job and Drew McIntyre doesn't. I think that's the biggest surprise. You could throw Brodus Clay in there. I don't think he was given a shot at being the monster heel that he very well could have done. I remember his quick 2 or 3 week run with Adrian Neville down in NXT, and he can pull off that monster heel who just doesn't care about anybody and will kill you. So that was a little bit of a surprising move. They definitely could have kept him off the TV for a little while and brought him back as somebody new, and people probably would get behind it because that's what they originally thought he was going to be, not the Funkasaurus. So that was surprising as well. Theodore Long was just one of those. Obviously, you didn't need him on TV, but I thought for sure he'd be working an office position or working an agent position, especially now that they're kind of bringing back managers. If nothing else, he can help out with guys who or women who are playing the managerial role since he was one for so long, even helping out the referees. He was a referee for a decade or so. So there were a few surprises in there, and like I said, there's a lot of other people on the roster that haven't been cut that I still think we might see in the future, and it might not be this week, it might not be next week, but like I said, is once they combined the world championships and once they kind of got rid of the brand split, It was bound to happen. There's no way you can have a sustainable roster of the size they do with the stars they built on two separate shows and put them all onto one roster and one set of featured acts and have it be successful. It just won't work. And they were able to do it in the 80s and things like that and rotate people in and out, but you also had a higher demand for the Intercontinental Champion, and you also had a higher demand for Tag Team Champions. They don't have that anymore. And there's not another place where you can steal talent from. You can't just go to another territory and say, hey, can we borrow this guy for 7 months? Or we're going to sign you for a year, and then you're going to be gone. Instead of bringing back old talent and having them come in for a year, come in for 6 months, and then they'll be gone for a little while. So when those guys take up a top place at the top of the card, it's just one more slot that doesn't need to be filled. And obviously the guys that are on the lower part of the totem pole are the first ones to be eliminated. And this list is pretty much a list of the guys, at least main roster guys, that were on the bottom of the totem pole. Like, you saw them get caught, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I knew they were, I kind of knew they were employed, but I saw them every once in a while. Like, the most prominent ones were the 3MB guys. And honestly, even that, I think they were doing stuff with them just because Hornswoggle's movie is going to be coming out relatively soon. So as weird as it sounds, I think they were getting airtime because of their kind of mascot, and that doesn't say very much for the act itself, and doesn't say much for what ideas they have planned for them. And I mean, when you get pinned by a mini bull and Drew McIntyre, and I think everybody on that team did at one point or another, you better start looking for other jobs and start posting your resume up on monster.com, because you got to be seeing a pink slip in your future. And Just the fact that you go on WWE.com, it just says WWE released several stars today. We wish them all in future endeavors. But you get your own little future endeavor thing, and the only one they put a picture up for, they put a main photo up of is Oksana, so they found the one hot one and threw her photo up there. But it's like I said, we kind of became numb to this a few years ago when it was happening all the time, and since it hasn't happened in a while, I think it's become a bigger news story than it really needs to be. These are all guys who nobody's going to really miss. These aren't people that are going to make a splash anywhere else, I don't believe. Even like you said, Evan Bourne, he just kept breaking stuff. I mean, he went from a torn Achilles to a broken foot to a broken hand to whatever you can think of. This guy kept getting hurt, and it was all in rehab. So what the hell were they going to do once he was on the road? But no, there's not really there's not really any surprise. Like I said, if there were any surprises, it would be the people who are still on the roster that they didn't cut today. I see out sooner rather than later, put it that way. Especially with all the talent they have down in NXT. They have plenty of people to bring up to replace some of these people that aren't over as well as they should be. And you wouldn't miss them. And just the fact that they got rid of Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre, I could see them making room for like the Ascension or somebody in the tag team ranks to bring them up. It would make perfect sense. So, I mean, that's fresh face for people to watch compared to the guys that have been being pinned by a mini bull without a tail for a while.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of the reason Heath Slater pretty much still has a job at this point is because they recently promoted on WWE.com, I want to say not even a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, that they just welcomed their first son, I don't remember if it was a son or a daughter, him and his wife. So I'm sure they're going to want to have people searching later on the website and see released 2 weeks after the fact that they just had their first child. So I guess Heath Slater probably maybe about another couple months there as far as that goes, as far as releases.
They've done it numerous times.
Didn't they release Dawn Marie when she was pregnant?
Yeah, they released her when she. Well, they released her when she was pregnant. I think they released Tommy Dreamer when he. When Beulah was pregnant, they've released numerous people, and when they've been in a family way or whatever you want to say, but so they don't really have anything to go with on that. I mean, honestly, I'd be surprised if they even realized it when they released them.
True, very true. All right, with the releases out of the way, like I said, before we get to the top three, I just got a text from Cam. Cam's not going to be joining us tonight, so it's just going to be Matt and I. So if you're out there listening, you want to join in on the conversation, the number is 818-532-9786 if you want to join in on any of the recent stuff or talk about the heel turns when we get to them. Like I said, the number is 818-532-9786. So moving on now from the releases, we'll talk about the current happenings on Raw and SmackDown since Payback. I really wouldn't even know which one you would call the big news out of the first two that I mentioned before the show. So, you know what? Let's start with the WWE title situation, considering that is the prize of the WWE. And this past Monday on Raw, Daniel Bryan was stripped of the title by Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Obviously, you got everybody that's probably listening knows Daniel Bryan has had neck surgery. From all reports, the recovery isn't going as well as they would hope, and he wasn't going to be cleared in time for Money in the Bank at the end of this month. So, as for the time being, the Money in the Bank ladder match is now for the WWE title. There has been talk about adding a second Money in the Bank match with the briefcase, with a briefcase at stake with the guaranteed title shot, in addition to the title match one. And as of right now, we have Alberto Del Rio, we have Randy Orton, and why are the rest of the names slipping my head right now as far as who is in the match? I should have...
Cesaro. He said Randy Orton.
I know that... I should say that before I preface this, this is a SmackDown spoiler, so if you want to hear this in the next 5 seconds, I will turn away. But on SmackDown this Friday, Bray Wyatt gets added to the match, and Sheamus. Sheamus is the other one that is currently added in the match. So there's four listed right now. Bray Wyatt will be five. That leaves presumably at least two more spots, maybe three more spots for somebody else to get added. One would assume that John Cena will more than likely be added to the WWE title match, especially for the fact that Bray Wyatt's in it now. And if I had to venture a guess, I would say Kane probably gets added to it too, for the simple fact of that he would have been in the title match had Daniel Bryan been cleared to wrestle. So they might figure, might as well just give him the chance to put him in there and fight for the title in the ladder match. Given these options, I want to say that none of them are that appealing to me. If I had to choose somebody for this match to win the title, and I actually wrote a column about it this past Monday for HGCWrestling.com and InsidePulse.com, I threw out the suggestion of Bray Wyatt being the one to win the title. When you look at all the options that they have out there right now, Alberto Del Rio is not going to win it. I don't think Randy Orton's going to win it after just having the run that he did with the title. I don't think Sheamus, maybe if they're going to want to give him a push now and push him up back to the top of the card. And I personally don't think Cesaro is ready to hold the title. And that's why I made the argument for Bray Wyatt in my column this past weekend. I said that he needs a recovery boost from his feud with John Cena. He's somebody who's still over with the crowd, so it's not a situation kind of like the Royal Rumble a few years ago where Sheamus won just out of nowhere without having any kind of prominence on the card whatsoever. Here you got Bray Wyatt, who has just been a major feud with John Cena. He's, like I just said, he's still over with the crowd. The crowd is still into his act. He's a guy who's improved throughout the year in the ring. He's had good matches with Daniel Bryan. He's had good matches with John Cena. And if you want a temporary placeholder to get you through the summer, I think giving the title to somebody like Bray Wyatt amplify his message, if you want to say that, where they talk about having all of his followers and his messages growing, and then they can sell the fact that now that he's the WWE champion, his message is going to get out even further, and he has more power to him, and more people will start following him. I just think it's the easiest story to tell as far as any other competitors in the match go. And you already have the built-in situation where if Daniel Bryan were to come back, the two have history, to have put out a great match as a Royal Rumble, and you can just pretty easily transition into that feud if you want to get Daniel Bryan back in the title picture. There's a bunch of various different, you know, theories and rumors out there. One has even somebody like Brock Lesnar returning and just taking the belts off the ladder and leaving to end the pay-per-view. That's something that I could see happen, but then it's also something where you're going to have the WWE champion not on TV as much as they should be, and well, I shouldn't say as much as they should be, but as much as you're used to, and then you more than likely in that scenario are going to have to get Brock Lesnar to agree to work more dates, which I'm sure if you threw X amount of dollars at him, you would have no problem doing. Then there's the whole, you know, John Cena will grab one belt and Bray Wyatt grabs the other, then you have two champions. I don't think that'll happen, because that's kind of a cop-out finish. So there's a lot of variables and intriguing scenarios going into this pay-per-view now. It's maybe one of the most, it's probably the most anticipated pay-per-view in a while, since WrestleMania at least. You don't know who's going to be champion, and if they add a second Money in the Bank match, you could always do this scenario where somebody wins the briefcase, and then they cash in right after on a guy who just went through a grueling ladder match to win the title, and whoever wins the briefcase cashes in. So there's a lot of different scenarios playing out. And obviously, I kind of skirted over the fact that Daniel Bryan had to surrender the title because of his health. I have always been, if you read my Raw reviews, if you read any of the columns I've wrote in the last couple weeks, I have always been on the side of let Daniel Bryan rest for however long he has to let him rest. I don't care if it's another month. I don't care if it's another 3 months or 6 months. I would rather have Daniel Bryan for another 5 or 6 years than rush him back and lose him again in another 5 or 6 weeks. So I'd always want to put the long-term, you know, health of somebody forefront. Of course, that's probably not how they think behind the scenes, not people like Vince McMahon and all of his right-hand and left-hand men think. So who knows how quickly Daniel Bryan will get brought back. As I said, I would love to see him back for SummerSlam in a program with Brock Lesnar. Great if it happens. If not, and yes, the rest, I'm perfectly fine with that. They're not going to throw, I don't think CM Punk's walking in the door anytime soon. So there's a lot of scenarios going on with the WWE title, and yeah, I haven't even tied in the Shield to that, which maybe we'll talk about. Either Matt will bring it up, we can talk, or we'll talk about the Shield after we get through the whole WWE title scenario. So Matt, what about you? What are your thoughts on the whole Money in the Bank now being for the WWE title, and who, if you had to peg somebody right now, 2 weeks away, who do you think would be the most likely candidate to walk out of Money in the Bank with the title?
First of all, just talking about Daniel Bryan, I wrote it when I was reviewing. A lot of people don't really know this or have an understanding of it. I kind of have a little bit more of an understanding of it, given my personal background and just my life. But the injury Daniel Bryan sustained was something that it has been over the years of his wrestling, and it's not a bone injury. A lot of people hear neck surgery or hear something of that nature, and they think Edge or John Cena or Kurt Angle or even Stone Cold Steve Austin. But all of them had fusion neck surgery because they had a broken neck or they had a broken disc or something wasn't right in their spine. Daniel Bryan had a nerve problem where the nerve endings were collapsing and they were basically caving in on each other. Now, when you have a problem with something like that and it's in your neck, it's affecting your entire nervous system. So this poor guy is going in there and getting what seemed to be like a surgery that was too good to be true, which is what I said the very first time his doctor showed up on WWE TV talking about what the surgery was and how successful it was and how minimally invasive it was and everything. I was sitting here with my wife, and I'm just saying, I'm like, this guy just seems absolutely shady to me. It does not seem right how much he's just saying that this surgery isn't as big a deal as it should be. It is a big deal. If you're dealing with the nerves and you're dealing with the nervous system, that's not an easy thing to fix. That's not something that you just go in with one surgery and the guy's all better and they can start working out and they can start getting ready and be back in time. You're dealing with something where his hands could go numb at random times, feet could go numb, legs. So regular rehab and regular training and recovery, you really can't calculate a time for that. And the fact that they were saying, oh, yeah, it was a successful surgery, and you should be back by the next pay-per-view, if not the next pay-per-view, then the following one. They were saying that days after the surgery. Nervous system doesn't work that way. You have to really kind of give it time and see how things connect, see if things are firing in the right places, and everything's responding the right way, and things aren't pushing on the wrong places, and you caught every piece that was wrong and everything that was sending the wrong direction or whatever you want to call it, just misfiring in his nervous system. And that doctor, I just wish he had found a different doctor, because honestly, it looks like he talked him into the surgery, and as when he did the surgery, he kind of gave him a idealistic time frame for a return and got everybody's hopes up when this was much more serious than I think they thought, I think anybody thought, because of this one doctor. I don't know if he got a second opinion from anybody or he spoke with anybody else, but this just it seems wrong to begin with, and it seems wrong. I mean, obviously it's wrong now because God knows how long he's going to be out for. But I'm with you. Especially this type of surgery, which we don't know how it's going to heal, if it's going to heal or what's going on. There's a legitimate chance that he might not wrestle again. There's a definite chance of that. If it's the option of being able to walk again or being able to wrestle again, he's going to choose walk. He wants a family. He wants to settle down. He wants to retire eventually. This is the type of injury that could retire somebody because you don't know how to really fix it, and you don't know how your body's going to respond to the being fixed. So I'm very curious to see what steps are taken as far as his rehab goes into trying to get him back to the physical health and the way he was feeling before all the symptoms started kicking in. And hopefully that does happen sooner rather than later. But for the time being, like you said, I'm fine with him being off the television because we want him around for the long run. And I honestly want him to be as safe as possible. This is a young guy, a very young guy, who just happened to hit his stride. And when he hit his stride, it was after taking all the insane bumps and all the insane matches he's had and all the insane things he's done for the last 14 years. So there's going to be wear and tear on his body, and it caught up with him. Just had a horrible time. As far as the money in the bank goes, I could see them going the safe route and putting it on Kane or putting it on Randy Orton. I don't think they'll put it on John Cena, even though he's kind of taken Daniel Bryan's place as far as standing up to Stephanie McMahon and doing all that stuff. But I hope they don't go back to their normal fallback. But history tells us they go back to somebody that they can depend on. Usually that means a veteran. That means a Cena, an Orton, could mean a Sheamus, somebody of that nature. I wrote that their best choice may be going with Cesaro. I still think they're going to build to a Cesaro-Brock Lesnar match at SummerSlam where Cesaro finally says, I'm sick and tired of you, Heyman, always touting about Brock Lesnar when he's not even here. And I'm here, and I deserve the promotion that you're giving to him. You need to focus on me a little bit more. So I could see them totally having a match at SummerSlam. And if you add the WWE title into that, now you have a summer that people are looking forward to again. Right now, everything's up in the air. Things were looking bright. Things were looking ready to go with Daniel Bryan as your champion. Heading into all new fresh matchups, you could have had him versus Kane for a little bit, get him out of the way, then stick him in there against Seth Rollins, then stick him in there against Orton again, and then maybe you got somebody else waiting in the wings, and you want to turn them, or he goes up against another monster, or maybe somebody else's size. So there's a lot of different options when your champion is Daniel Bryan. Throw Cesaro into that mix. Get a full babyface turn out of them, and now people are interested in your summer product again. And SummerSlam is a big deal for WWE. That is their second biggest season of the year. And if they don't have anything interesting for SummerSlam, they're going to start to panic. And I can almost guarantee you right now they're starting to panic. So I could see them taking a risk on somebody like Cesaro. I mean, they already took the risk in pairing him with Heyman and putting him into the top Money in the Bank match. For him to be in that match, I mean, he was almost guaranteed to win the briefcase, is everything that we heard. Now it's for the championship. I say keep going with your same plan. Get him to that top level, because as soon as he wins that championship, you've got another main event player. He's not that young of a guy, so if you want to run with him, run with him now. I mean, you can have a good heel run for maybe a month or two, and then have Lesnar come back, get the SummerSlam program going, and now you have a babyface for however long you need him to. Or keep him heel, and if you see Daniel Bryan making strides and being able to come back, then you got a whole another scenario where you have Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro, which would be a fantastic rivalry. I think that's their best bet as far as winning back the fans that they're going to lose with Daniel Bryan being off television and CM Punk not coming back anytime soon. So I think that's where they should go. Whether or not they do, it depends on how scared they are with their product. If they need to go back to a fallback plan, you're gonna see Orton, or you're gonna see Cena win the belt at least at Money in the Bank. Whether or not somebody cashes in on him right away, or cashes in on him later that night or the next night or whatever it is, that's a very real possibility, because if they do set up that second ladder match and put a lot of guys in there, guys like Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, all the mid-card guys, if you start throwing those mid-card guys who are ready to break through to the main event into that ladder match, you're going to have a lot of options for people to cash in, and it's going to be very, very, very interesting to see. But as of right now, there is no second ladder match. It's just a WWE title match, and I have to go with what I think is a smart idea and going with Cesaro. I know you like Bray Wyatt. I just don't think that they should put a championship belt on him just yet. I think once his act either starts to become stale, or once he's able to click against another big-time player, then he's good to go. Well, I would rather see him as the villain to the hero champion than having him be the villain champion to whomever is chasing him. Because I just feel like right there, that's going to be John Cena, and we're going to get that matchup again for another 6 months. And I'm sorry, I'm not ready for that. I think the matches they've had have been too much already, and I just want to keep them away from one another. I think that's the main reason why I don't want Wyatt to win the championship, because as soon as he does, it throws him into that storyline with the Authority and with Triple H and with John Cena now and with Evolution and the Shield and everything going on, and you need to keep them separate. So have a good showing in the match, but I don't think you should put the title belt on.
Yeah, and I can see the story there with Cesaro too, possibly winning. He would probably be my number two choice. And like you said, if Daniel Bryan can't come back and you want to give the title to Cesaro, and they can play in the Brock Lesnar story, like you said, Cesaro can be walking around WWE champion, and you can still just have Paul Heyman come out there proclaiming that his client Brock Lesnar broke the streak. And you can have Cesaro be, you know, like you said, get pissed off that Heyman's still promoting that Brock Lesnar broke the streak where Cesaro's here as champion, and then you have that written right there. As far as putting the title on a John Cena or Randy Orton, they're risking losing of some of their fans by going back to the same old that happened. I just have a feeling that I think they're going to try to avoid that as best as possible, and that's why I can see Cesaro and or Bray Wyatt being the two guys walking out of the pay-per-view as champion. I just think if you go back to a Cena or an Orton, or even I wouldn't put Sheamus in that category, because Sheamus is somebody who has been away from the WWE/world title scene long enough that I think you can get away with it. He's not really a main event guy anymore. He's kind of in the upper mid-card status where if you threw him in a main event, he wouldn't seem out of place, kind of like this ladder match. So I just think if they go back to a Cena or an Orton like that, they're just risking losing some of their fans, even more so, even more than just the fans of this season, because Daniel Bryan's going to be out for X amount of time. So that's just one thing I just hopefully don't think I could see them doing. And then kind of moving on, you just kind of brought up the situation with the Shield a little bit, there, Matt, and you're talking about Money in the Bank. Obviously, if we had come to the show last week, the big news would have been the fact that the Shield is no more. After seemingly looking like they were once again a strong unit beating Evolution at Payback for the second time, the next night on Raw, Seth Rollins goes ahead and turns on Ambrose and Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. I would feel safe to say that we all thought a Shield breakup was coming at some point down the line, but I'm pretty sure nobody thought it was coming this soon. You, like I said, they had just beaten Evolution. You kind of question where they might be going next, but I just don't think anybody thought a breakup was coming this soon. But I thought the end of Raw 2 weeks ago was very well done as far as Rollins turning. We're always looking for that, you know, shock angle to draw us in. The WWE normally likes to do their big summer angles that get them going for summer toward the end of July. At the start of July, they kind of started a little early this time with turning. I just thought everybody played their parts well with Rollins selling it with no emotion and then the shocked look on Ambrose's face after Rollins hit Reigns with the chair. So I thought it was very well done. Rollins has already gotten a good amount of heel heat last week and then this past week on Raw. I thought Rollins did a pretty good job explaining what he did for what he did, talking about how it being a business decision and he's now about using the Triple H line as for business. But I also thought even better was Dean Ambrose before that delivering his promo against telling him what he was going to do to Seth Rollins. As I said in my review, I think I tweeted this out during Raw as well, that promo, I think, at least to me, was the reason that they decided to turn Seth Rollins heel instead of Dean Ambrose. Rollins, while improving on the mic, I don't think would have been able to deliver that promo the way that Dean Ambrose did, just in the mannerisms and the wording, everything. So I think Ambrose did a great job. Reigns had a tough act to follow there with that, but I thought he held up his end well. So now you got a question, where are they going to go with this from here? I'm assuming, at least I think that even if you do a future another Money in the Bank match with the briefcase, I think they're going to keep Ambrose and Rollins separate unless they bring up something on Raw next week where, you know, Triple H has promised Rollins to be in the title match or be in the second ladder match. And that's kind of why I hope Cam was on, because he actually wrote about his idea that Seth Rollins should be the next WWE champion. And I could see that if maybe they had pushed a little bit more this past Monday on Raw, what Triple H exactly promised for Seth Rollins with his heel turn, or if Rollins just, you know, kind of did what he did because it's best for business. So I don't think that's happening. I think to keep the Shield story and the WWE title story as separate as possible, especially for the fact that they added Randy Orton to the ladder match right away, and with Seth Rollins, if Triple H did whatever for Seth Rollins, how come he didn't add Seth Rollins right away to the match? So I think we're going to get Dean Ambrose against Seth Rollins at this pay-per-view at Money in the Bank. Where that leaves Roman Reigns is kind of up in the air, I guess. You could always maybe put Roman Reigns against Kane if you wanted to go down that route. You could put Roman Reigns in the future the Money in the Bank briefcase match if that happens. But we all know that it's probably eventually leading to Roman Reigns versus Triple H at SummerSlam and one of the big matches there. So as much as, at least me personally, when it first happened, I was kind of distraught and upset and kind of shocked at the fact that the Shield broke up so quickly, I think there's even more possibilities now that they're broken up as to what they can do next than if they had stuck together. Because I didn't know, maybe we would have gotten a couple months or so again more out of the Evolution feud, but how much longer can you play that out? And they had already feuded with the Wyatt family back earlier in the year, so do you really want to go back to that scenario where they're feuding with the Wyatts? So there wasn't a lot left for them, I think, to do as a group, and there wasn't anybody that they hadn't feuded with yet that could have come together and formed some kind of challenge with that. So I think there's a good amount of possibilities here. Like I said, all three of these guys, and we've talked about this on this show before, I think are going to be big single stars for this company down the line. I think two or at least, maybe even as early as next year, these three guys could be the top three stars of the company in their various roles. I think that even though Seth Rollins turned heel, it's not going to be something where he's long-term. I could even see a scenario where at the end of the year, he's already a face again. His moveset in the ring, his, you know, just everything about him kind of, and as Matt has said numerous times in the show, screams the second version of Jeff Hardy minus all of the mental and drug problems that Jeff Hardy had. So Seth Rollins is somebody that I think is eventually going to turn back face, and I can see Ambrose turning heel later on down the road. Obviously, it seems like Roman Reigns is the next John Cena, possibly, if you believe everything you read, that he's probably in line to win the Royal Rumble next year and possibly main event WrestleMania 31. So there's a lot of scenarios for these guys down the line. Like I said, I kind of played out mine right there. Maybe you can even have Seth Rollins win the title and feud with Daniel Bryan in the fall, like Cam brought up, which I think almost any wrestling fan out there would tell you they'll sign up for that wherever they can. So what were your thoughts about the heel turn, Matt? And I guess what do you think everybody's in the Shield's future holds going forward?
Well, the first thing I want to know is how long did it take you to get over the fact that they broke up? Is that like your favorite boy band breaking up in the
1990s? Yeah, yeah. That's that. I mean, they're in power on me pretty much, and like I think it was after I tweeted out that photo of me with the Shield shirt on drinking on Saturday that I was like, okay, I'm finally over this now.
Yeah, I kind of when I saw that happen, it was just funny because my wife and I just looked at each other and I'm like, I'm pretty sure Justin just got his Shield T-shirt a few days ago, so yeah, that was good timing. It wasn't something, like I said, I wasn't so surprised by the turn as much as I was by who turned. I am pretty sure anybody who watches WWE thought that Dean Ambrose was the one that was going to be turning on the Shield. And WWE, and to their credit, really just kind of flipped the entire deck on everybody and had the very overlooked Seth Rollins back on both members of the Shield. It works out well when you think about it and you think about their history and how, yes, he was the overlooked member of the Shield and only really started standing out recently. People weren't giving him too much credit, and that's a perfect way to push him as the jealous guy that's getting and looking out for himself instead of looking out for the group. As far as Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns' promo on Monday was, I believe, the best promo that Shield has ever cut, and Seth Rollins wasn't a part of it. That says a lot for Ambrose and Reigns. I think it was Ambrose's best promo on WWE TV, not including NXT. He did some fantastic work down in FCW, which is now NXT. But that was the Dean Ambrose that we wanted to see on the main roster. That was the compelling graphic. That was the guy that you're going to love to hate. And that's the guy that's going to be the anti-hero. He's gonna put butts in seats, put it that way. And Roman Reigns is going to be your big powerhouse babyface. He already is. Just give him a little while, and like I've said numerous times, he's got the look, he's got the size, he's got the talent. He already has part of what he needs on the microphone because he's keeping it short and sweet. You can tell even on Monday when he drags on a little too long, he starts to lose people. That was Seth Rollins' problem. He would ramble on for a little too long, and somebody would need to cut him off because it started getting a little, okay, I'm going to lose interest. Reigns is lucky in the fact that he could deliver a closing line very well and a very intimidating presence that he could deliver that closing line, and that's all you remember from his promo. I see him being very over once he gets into the title picture. But like you said, we're going to have a few months of Rollins-Shield feud. I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of Seth Rollins and Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. That might change depending on what they do with the WWE Championship, but kind of seems that way. Like you said, really don't want to put the title back on Orton. Kind of want to keep him separate a little bit. Go with this new idea of maybe Randy Orton and Triple H. They've already pitched the idea of Randy Orton and Triple H are grooming Seth Rollins to be the next big thing, and have Randy Orton seem like he's taking him under his wing and teaching him the right way to do things and how to be as conniving and cruel as Evolution is or Legacy was and things of that nature. Rollins, I think, needs a strong heel with him in order to get the reaction they want. I know Ric Flair's coming back. I think that would be a good and bad idea to pair him up with Seth Rollins. I think he would get a lot out of that pairing, but no matter what, people are going to cheer for Ric Flair, and especially in the WWE. People are going to cheer for the legends. It's just how it works nowadays. It's not the first Evolution where people could boo Ric Flair. He's not going to get that physical anymore. He's a nostalgia act. So people are looking for him to be on the show. And whenever he gets on the show, they're going to be into it. They're going to be cheering for him. So a brand new heel, you kind of don't want to put him with them, even though it looks good on paper. I don't think it'll play too well to the audience. I do see a lot of Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose matches. God, if they ever combine the two middleweight or the middle championships and put them together, that'd be a great feud in between the main event and the lower card, or a tag team title type thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. If they're not doing a rising star Money in the Bank, I could see them putting Seth Rollins in the world championship one. Just a Triple H kind of thing where he did with Randy Orton. And this time he's like, oh, we have two spots to fill? Oh, that would be a nice place for Kane and Seth Rollins or something like that. And maybe Cena takes out Kane and he's in it all of a sudden. But, yeah, I kind of see that if there's not another ladder match. If there's another ladder match, absolutely, I believe he's going to be in it. I can see all three of them being in it. It depends on what they're planning to do and who they plan on having win that briefcase. I don't really see Seth Rollins walking around with a Money in the Bank briefcase for very long, even if he did win it. So it might be a little off. I do like the pairing of having him with Randy Orton or with Triple H for a while, because he needs to garner more of a reaction from the crowd. He doesn't really get it right now. All he's really gotten is kind of that shock, okay, this is the new heel that we have to boo type of reaction. He needs to really, really establish himself as somebody that people can hate and that the people can boo for a legitimate reason. Right now, all he did was turn his back on his friends. That's what he did. Okay, well, once they get him in the ring or once they start fighting, where does it go from there type of idea? So you really have to start getting him almost in, like, a Jericho-type mode of, I did it because I want to be the best and I'm already better than the other two. The reason why the Shield is what stayed together so long and was so successful was because of me. Got to really play up that egotistical side of himself. And if he can do that, and if he can get crowds to start to believe in him a little bit more, and like I said, he's got to tone down his offense. He can't do the high-flying stuff that he was doing just weeks ago. He's got to get back to that cheap way out. I keep going back to Jericho. But you didn't see Jericho doing his lion salts and his big memorable moves when he was a heel. You would see him fake doing it or go to do something, and then instead he would go for an eye poke or he would go for a low blow or something completely heel and not even remotely babyface. So you have to get that aspect to surround Seth Rollins, and they are going to have some work with him compared to a Dean Ambrose who was ready-made to be a heel, or even Roman Reigns, who could have been a heel just by his physical presence and the fact that people have been cheering him for so long. If you turned Roman Reigns, the crowd would be pissed just because they want to cheer him. So you have a little bit of work to do with him. You got the shock factor over. You got people excited because it was something different. Nobody expected it. But now where do you go from there? What are you going to do with them? Monday didn't show us very much. Hopefully they have more coming up in the next few weeks or in months. At least I hope for his career. And it's just not a heel turn just to turn him, and he ends up down in the middle or lower card.
Yeah. And this past couple weeks kind of had the shock value, and now we're waiting to see how everything else plays out from here. We've gotten a little bit of both stories so far concerning the Shield and the WWE title. I'm sure this week and the week leading into Money in the Bank, we'll kind of find out more, maybe get that better idea of who's in line for what, and if they do a ladder match for a briefcase, maybe, like you said, they put all the Shield guys in there, and if you want to stretch out the Shield story a little bit more and maybe even save something like Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose until SummerSlam, maybe see if you can do that and stretch it out. I don't know if that's possible, but if they want to play out this story all summer, it's definitely something that you could think about. So I don't have anything else current events to bring up unless you did, Matt, before we move on to our top three.
No, not that I can think of. I'm actually catching up on current events now because I haven't been able to in the last week or so.
Nice. Okay, well then we will move on, like I said earlier, kind of piggybacking off of what we just talked about with the shock factor for Seth Rollins and his heel term. We're talking about Matt and I, and Cam actually did send me his list of history. The top three, our own top three most surprising slash shocking heel turns in wrestling history. Obviously, when somebody...
Oh, man, you mean I have to mock his choices and he's not even on the show? That's just sad.
Yeah, he doesn't even have time to defend himself with any of his choices this time.
Damn. He's so good at defending himself.
I will say that his number three one, considering we've already talked about it, his number three is Seth Rollins turning on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. I think it's a little... Yeah, really.
Wow.
I think it's a little too early to judge that, depending on where things play out going down the line. So will say that it was definitely surprising, but it wouldn't have been one of my top three because, like I said, it's just way too early and we don't know what exactly is going to happen in the next month, 2 months, 6 months from now with this heel turn. So what about you, Matt? What do you think of that?
No. That was – he's – I hate to say it, but he's way, way, way too invested in the members of the Shield and their careers and I think that was much more of a – I have to say that's probably the biggest mark selection that he's made in a while. And I mean, just the fact that he listed that as number three and wrote a column why Seth Rollins should be WWE champion jumping the gun a little bit and got to be a little bit more realistic. There's no way that this ranks up there in top three in history, especially since it's only a week and a half old. That's just it's like saying that the Shield is in the top three of stables of all time when you have stables like the Four Horsemen or Evolution and DX and any stable you can think of, the Dangerous Alliance, the Legion of Doom, anything you can think of, and you automatically put the Shield up there in number three or number two or number one. I have a feeling Cam would. And there was argument made to put them in the top three or the top ten, but then not the top three, and this should not be in the top three as well.
I did do that column about a month ago talking about where the Shield ranks, and I had them at five. And in front of them, I had the NWO, the Four Horsemen, the Fabulous Freebirds, and the Generation X. So I had them at number five on my list.
I still think there's a lot of groups that could put up a fight there. I mean, you could just say something like Team Extreme, which is the Hardy Boys and Lita, as a stable, and technically those are three wrestlers who were a stable. I would put them higher than the Shield. I think they had a bigger impact on the industry than the Shield did, especially around the time that they were big. But yeah, I mean, I'm not looking at stables right now, but there were a lot. I mean, I loved the Dangerous Alliance. I would put them very high. They would definitely be in my top five. You look at talent like Rick Rude, Larry Zbyszko, Steve Austin. I mean, they had the talent to rank up there with pretty much any other group in history. And a lot of people forget about them. And it's a sad thing because I really do think that they're probably one of the best stables WCW ever had. It was just before WCW was famous. So a lot of people just kind of write them off.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually just watched on the network the other day the War Games match that they had with the faces they faced. That was one of the best, if not. I mean, I haven't seen any of the really original War Games matches in a while, but that was probably one of the better ones that they ended up having. Mm-hmm. I'd probably put that match at least probably in the top five as far as War Game matches go. But moving back from stables, Matt, why don't you give us the number three that you have on your list for most shocking heel turns?
Heel turns. My number three, I have a couple, but I'm going to have to go with Lita. Turning on Cade. But it was really turning on the fans and turning on Matt Hardy and just aligning herself with Edge. It really was a turn on Kane, and TV-wise, she turned on Kane to join Edge, but the real-life situation between her, Adam Copeland, and Matt Hardy is what kind of pushed that to the forefront and what made her being a heel and her capitalizing on this so much more. I consider that a shock simply because during the Kane-Alita angle when it was with Matt Hardy and he was fighting for her freedom and everything else, here was this woman who everybody just wanted to see get away from the evil monster, and she had the whole wedding ceremony where she wore a black dress to it, and Gene Snitsky killed her baby, and it wasn't his fault, but yeah. Still, I think it was a shocking moment simply because if you didn't know the backstory of what was going on at that time between Amy Dumas, Adam Copeland, and Matt Hardy, you just saw the very vulnerable woman who was trapped by this demon Kane who, for some reason or another, took a liking to her and was really standing up for her, really fighting for her, until she turned her back on him and jumped into the arms of Edge, and the rated R era began. And I think that's one of the biggest times for one of the biggest characters ever in WWE. It launched Edge into a Hall of Famer and launched Lita into a Hall of Famer. Both of them came out as massive, massive stars by the end of their run together. And it all started with them pairing up together on screen and turning heel. I think that was probably the best idea they could have done.
Yeah, I was definitely shocked when that happened, for the simple fact of they actually kind of played into what was going on in real life, like you said, behind the scenes with the whole, you know, Lita and Edge cheating on their respective spouses with each other. It's just not something that I don't think we were used to at that time. And like you said, Kane had started to, like, he kind of care for Lita after everything that they had been through, and you kind of felt like something was, you know, changing in Kane, and all of a sudden Lita just go ahead and turns her back on Kane. And like you said, Edge at that point had the Money in the Bank briefcase. He was kind of on the verge of getting to the next main event level, and then his whole pairing with Lita just instantly, like you said, boosted both of their statuses. You had, at the beginning of the next year, you had Edge win the title with the Money in the Bank contract. Then he just went on to do so many other things. His feud with Mick Foley, he went on to become a multiple-time WWE World Champion, and just having Lita with him boosted his heat even more, where you might have been afraid that Edge was a guy that would have gotten over with the crowd and people would have started cheering him, but giving him Lita gave him that extra bit of heelish to him, because everybody hated Lita for what she did to Matt Hardy. So, yeah, no, I was definitely surprised when that happened, with the whole being able to play on the real-life situation that was going on. And like I said, at that time, something that WWE really wasn't kind of known to be doing. My number, I should have pointed out before we did this list that the Hulk Hogan joining the NWO was automatically disqualified, because that probably would have been everyone's number one if we were given the free reign to it. Obviously, that's probably, I don't think anybody would disagree, the most shocking heel turn in wrestling history, just because we weren't used to seeing Hulk Hogan as a heel. So that was automatically disqualified from our list. My number three, I am going to go with Triple H at WrestleMania 15, turning his back on DX and joining the corporation. And I'm going with that simply for the fact that he had just turned face, or I shouldn't say he turned face. He reunited with China, who had turned heel and joined the corporation a couple months earlier at WrestleMania, when Triple H fought Kane. China reunited with Triple H, and you thought everybody in DX was back together again. And then not even a couple matches later, when X-Pac is wrestling Shane McMahon, Triple H and China come out, and when you think they're there to aid X-Pac, he ends up pedigreeing X-Pac in the middle of the ring, and him and China both join the corporation. Like I said, that was shocking to me, for the simple fact of you're not used to seeing somebody like something like that go from face to heel that quickly, even with China. I guess I want to call it a Triple H / China heel turn. It was just shocking, because you think DX is all good, everything, the band's back together again, and then in actuality, Triple H goes on to join the corporation, and then this move kind of pretty much launched Triple H's singles career as a main eventer. 1 year later, he'd be the WWE champion going into WrestleMania. So, like I said, it was shocking for the simple fact of you think DX is back together again, and then all of a sudden, Triple H turns on the guy he brought back to the WWF a year earlier, X-Pac, and turns heel and joins the corporation. So that is my number three on my list. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was one of those weird moments where it was, oh, great, yeah, this is great. And then they had a promo before the match too, where DX is reunited once again, and everything was great, and I'm sorry, I was looking at Twitter, and apparently there's a big blow-up because Patterson came out as gay on Legends House. Pat Patterson's been gay for longer than I've been alive. I don't know, and it's been common knowledge that he was gay. I don't know how this is a revelation for anybody. But anyway, I'm utterly confused by why this is trending, and it's trending. I'm utterly confused by why this is a big deal and what's going on. But anyway, back to Xbox, yeah. Yeah, they could have promoted me beforehand, and it was all about how DX is reunited, China's back in the fold, blah, 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 and then all of 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes later, Triple H is out there pedigreeing them, and we have a new member of the corporation and the corp ministry, and we're off and running with a heel Triple H. Kind of never looked back after that moment. That's what really kick-started his move to the main event, was turning heel at WrestleMania 15. It really was that jump start that he needed, and sure, a lot of things happened in between then and when he was main eventing, but that was a big deal. That was a big moment and a big shock for, I think, anybody who was watching. Just the way they set it up perfectly with him reuniting with China, and then having the promo before the match too, just cementing the fact that, oh yeah, he's back together with DX, and everybody's home, and everybody's where they're supposed to be, and then he goes out and screws them all over. So no, that's definitely ranked very high up there on my list as well.
Okay, moving on to number two. Cam's number two is, and can I take any guesses, Matt?
God, Daniel Bryan turning on AJ, or AJ turning on Daniel Bryan? I guess that's the babyface turn. I don't know. It's something from the last 5 years, I'll say.
Yes, that is correct. It is CM Punk aligning with Paul Heyman.
He was a heel before that. Paul Heyman wasn't around when they clotheslined The Rock. He wasn't around when he sat at the announcer's table and told him why he clotheslined The Rock and why he should be headlining every show. Paul Heyman came after all that stuff. He was already a heel before Heyman came onto TV.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that sentiment.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I mean, I know they tried, you know, people obviously were still cheering Punk, but that's because CM Punk is CM Punk. But like you said, they, you know, he clotheslined The Rock and then did the whole sitting on the announce table berating Jerry Lawler for saying whatever Lawler said about Punk the week before. And, you know, adding Heyman, I think, was just kind of like the icing on the heel turn. I think at that point he was already gone, and Heyman was just the extra piece of pie that you got after dessert. It was over. That's, I guess, my analogy on it. I'm assuming that's kind of what you're thinking, too.
I'm just thinking that it's wrong. Oh, it's not. That's not. How is that considered a heel turn? I can understand if he said CM Punk, maybe CM Punk clotheslining The Rock, but even that, it wasn't that big of a shock, especially with the character he was playing at the time. I don't get it. It was, I just don't get it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'm baffled. I even forgot what my number two was, because this just doesn't make sense to me. Anyway,
I'll let you tell your number two, My number two is Paul Bearer turning down The Undertaker. And the reason that's a shock because, well,
which time?
For me at the time.
I said which time.
The first time. Yeah. I should specify that. The very first time it happened. Because, you know, when that happened, I was about 8, 9 years old at the time. And I grew up with Paul Bearer and The Undertaker. These two guys went together. And I'm sure every wrestling fan like that kind of felt the same way at the time. And it was in an era where there wasn't the internet or dirt sheets, you know, throwing out news reports and speculation all the time. So maybe if this had happened around now, it'd be different. But like I said, you grew up in that era with Paul Bearer and The Undertaker going through their feuds and delivering promos and going through the building of the caskets to put Kamala and Yokozuna in and all of the stuff that had happened. And then here is Paul Bearer just out of nowhere, turned, at least, you know, to the best of my knowledge, and I think I'm pretty right of this, just turning on The Undertaker with really no hints anywhere whatsoever that it was going to happen. So it was definitely a big shock to me as a kid, and even looking back on it now, you just think if you started watching wrestling in the early 90s, you saw Paul Bearer and The Undertaker go from the scary heels to the accepted faces, and just, like I said, the coffin matches and all the various feuds and promos they went through, and then all of a sudden it's just over with really kind of no hint whatsoever that Paul Bearer is leaving. So that is my number two on my list. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're talking about the Boiler Room Brawl match, right? When turned to become, when he became Mankind's manager. I remember that more for, I think, the video packages that came after it of just really how big a moment it was in both of their careers. And Paul went on to manage many guys afterwards. And, I mean, before that, before he had the whole Undertaker-Paul Bearer run when he was Percy Pringle the third or whatever it was, he did manage a lot of different people, just never in WWE or WWF at that time. He was always the Undertaker guy. Like, there was never even a doubt that, or even an idea that this guy could manage somebody else. He was just, he was part of the Undertaker's act. That's who Undertaker came out with, and he came out with The Undertaker. There is no distinguishing between the two of them. That was a big moment because I don't think anybody really considered it an option. Nobody really ever thought that this was a possibility, that this man could be aligned with somebody else. And this man all of a sudden now is with Mankind, who they were trying to put over the fact that Mankind was kind of the new Undertaker. He was the new unstoppable person, the only person that was able to ever put the Undertaker down and keep him down. And it really gave Mick Foley or Mankind that legitimacy that really solidified him in the WWF as somebody to look out for. And I remember, I think it was either the next pay-per-view or the following one, that he wrestled Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship. So it was very soon after that that all of a sudden he was wrestling the top guy in the company. That was Paul Bearer's influence. That was Paul Bearer's presence. And that shows you how over a manager can be given the right spotlight and given the right people to work with. I mean, up until his death, he could come back at any moment and you would automatically pot for seeing Paul Bearer. You'd automatically know he'd be with The Undertaker or Kane, and you'd automatically get this sense of, okay, everything is right in the world. We have Paul Bearer back on television with The Undertaker. So when he did turn and bashed Undertaker over the head with the urn and gave the urn upside down to Mankind and had Mankind win the match, that was something out of the blue and something, like I said, that was never even supposed to be considered, because there was no pallbearer without the Undertaker. And now all of a sudden we're seeing them divided, and everything just felt wrong in the world. And I completely see why that is your number two.
Why would you have to hopefully remember that now you're number two?
I did. I remembered it before, but for some reason I thought of it. Camp's stupid choice blew it out of my mind. And then I was looking at Twitter, and the stupid-ass people on Twitter kind of knocked me loopy for a little while. But, my number two is actually another female heel turn, which is surprising, because usually on these lists we don't really rank divas or diva moments so much in WWE history or wrestling history in general. And I was going to go with Trish Stratus at WrestleMania 20, just because it led to an awesome Trish Stratus heel run. But I have to go with Stephanie McMahon turning on her father and aligning herself with Triple H. It kicked off the McMahon-Helmsley era. It kicked off Stephanie McMahon as a true on-screen character. She wasn't just the boss's daughter anymore. She was her own character. I mean, if you watch the most recent Countdown show that the network put out, they ranked them as number two as far as best couples in WWE history. And if you look back on it, I mean, just think about this. She was a heel. I mean, she turned on her father when people only knew her as being the vulnerable Stephanie McMahon, who was 19 or 20 years old, was kidnapped by the Undertaker, who was essentially kidnapped by Triple H and DX, and got married in Vegas without her knowledge, and was drugged and Mickey'd, whatever it was. It would never pass USA standards in today's day and age. But back then, it was, oh my God, this is amazing that she can't marry Pat. She's already married to Triple H. But anyway, moving on, and they had a match surrounding it, and when she did smile and hug Triple H, and they came out, and all of a sudden she was wearing short skirts, and she was curling her hair or whatever the hell she was doing, and they would always just, like, they would berate people and fire Mick Foley a whole bunch of different times, and The Rock had to stand up to him, and they had this whole thing going on their very first run together. Their chemistry was so good as a heel couple, and him eventually eventually stealing the WWE championship for the first time, because he was married to the boss's daughter, and the boss was nowhere to be found. He was so disgusted by what happened that he just left. And Vince McMahon was just driven off TV so that Stephanie and Triple H were running the show. And there's no bigger spot to be in, especially when she had only made her TV debut, I think, that year. Because Armageddon was usually in December, and I believe she only started being an on-screen character that year when the whole corporation versus the ministry and the corporate ministry, that whole thing was going on. So this was a really big chance that they took and kind of threw on her shoulders, and God, did it work. I mean, she's one of those people who, I compare her to somebody like Vicky Guerrero, who doesn't even need theme music for people to boo her. Like, she just walks out on stage and people are booing her out of the building. Same thing with Stephanie. Even in today's age, when she's been on TV for 20 years or something ridiculous like that, we've really watched her grow up almost on television, on and off, compared to her on-screen character. And I was really excited when she came back as a full-time on-screen character, just because the heat that she can generate when she's into it. When she feels a storyline or feels a character and is able to play that overbearing, manipulative, in-your-face type of woman, you want to see her get smacked. And most of the time, you couldn't. Like, you never saw it. You wanted to see you wanted to see, like, the Rocky Bear rock bottom. But it wouldn't happen, and it was because she was a woman. And it was kind of one of those things, like, she needs to get her comeuppance. And it never, never would happen. She won the women's title, and then Triple H had the heavyweight championship, and it was just this whole regime that it really went for a while. And again, they actually got married and started dating because they were an on-screen couple, and it's merged real life into television even now with them being the authority and everything else. But it all started with her being 20 years old or something like that and being this fresh face that nobody really expected much out of. People were kind of felt awkward when she was on television, and they really felt bad for her when things were happening. And then she just comes out with this evil grin, and all of a sudden she's with the top heel in the company. And they ran with it, and I don't think they've looked back since.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like you said, when she debuted, she's this innocent, young McMahon daughter. And all of a sudden this happens, this heel turn. Like, again, it was something that I didn't remember expecting. And the next night on Raw, she's just cutting this promo against her dad, has this whole new different edge to her, and has just kind of launched herself into this heel that, even like you said, even today, is somebody, and I completely agree with you, that when you see her on TV and giving her speeches and talking down to somebody, you just want to slap her across the face. And that is why when Brie Bella slapped her across the face like she did at Payback, she got one of the loudest pops of the night, because Stephanie McMahon embraces that heel role so well and plays it so perfectly that you just want to see her get her due at some point. And that's what Brie Bella did. And that's why I liked it when it happened. I've pretty much enjoyed Stephanie McMahon throughout her entire tenure with the WWE as some sort of heel authority figure who just doesn't care, is all about her way or the highway. And like you said, it launched the McMahon-Helmsley era, which for the most part I think was pretty good for programming at that time. So it definitely helped launch Stephanie McMahon's career, like we both said, as far as going forward with her pairing with Triple H, and then obviously onto her role with the Alliance, and then as general manager of SmackDown. And just anywhere you go, if you were somebody watching her debut in 1999 and think that she was going to go on to have this great role as a heel authority figure who pretty much for all intents and purposes plays a bitch on TV and play it perfectly, I think somebody would have laughed at you. But she's taken this role perfectly. And like I said, for the last, 10, 15 years now, she's done a great job with it. So that leads us to our number ones. We'll get Cam's out of the way first. You know what? I really don't have too much of a problem with this being out of the list. I was going to put it on my list, but when Cam sent me his, I left it off. So I definitely kind of agree with this one being a shocker, though. And his number one is preface this by saying it has not happened within the last 5 years. It actually hasn't even happened within the last 10 years. His number one on his list is The Rock joining the corporation and turning heel at Survivor Series 1998. And I agree with that one. So it only took him to get to number one, but I agree with the shocking heel turn that he has on his list. What about you, Matt?
I'd maybe put that in a top 10, maybe a top 5, but The Rock and the manifestation of The Rock, I'm not talking about Rocky Maivia, but The Rock was a heel up until about a month or two before that pay-per-view. So essentially, almost his entire career, he was a heel. And then you were just supposed to believe that Vince McMahon was putting all his faith into Mankind and him winning the championship and becoming the now overused face of the company. I mean, you knew he didn't like Steve Austin. You knew that he was going to screw Austin over out of it. Out of the people looking on and looking at that tournament, they kind of tried to fake screw The Rock a couple times just so you would buy into it a little bit more. But come on. I mean, I don't know, like I said, it might make my top 10, but at number one, I really couldn't put it at a number one. I just couldn't. Just looking at, if it happened later in The Rock's career, maybe one of his heel turns later on in The Rock's career. If they had stuck with him longer as a babyface, maybe have him have a run as the world champion as a babyface first, and then turn him to win the championship again later, okay. But they didn't. This was months after he had turned face, months after he had really, really stood up for anything and really embraced the fans. And I don't know why, like, going back and watching that and, like, watching some of the pay-per-views beforehand and just putting it all together, if you watch it, I mean, he really never turned face. He was always, like, all he did was start playing to the crowd a little bit more. That's all he did. He never really embraced the crowd. He just wanted to win the world championship, and it was held by the Undertaker or somebody at some point, and then it got held up and it was put into the tournament. So he started, and it was just kind of working his way, and kind of the crowd made him a babyface, but he never really turned babyface in order for him to turn heel at Survivor Series. I mean, yeah, calling himself the People's Champion and everything else. He started that in the Nation of Domination. He was the People's Champion. So that's why I don't think I could really put this even, maybe not even in my top 10. It was just too early on in his career, and like I said, I don't think he ever even turned babyface to begin with.
Yeah, it would have made probably my top, like you said, maybe between 5 and 10. I guess, like I said, maybe not putting it at number 1 like Cam did, so I can see why it'd be on a list, but not, like you said, not number 1. But definitely, I can honestly say I probably would have put it on my 5 to 10 range somewhere in there. Matt, why don't you give your number 1?
It was very hard not to say my number 1 when discussing this bad number one, simply because my number one took place only a year before at the same main event, and that would be Vince McMahon's heel turn, which was going from the good guy babyface announcer who always rooted for the champion and was always pulling for the rules not to be broken and always looking to be on the right side of things to, I didn't screw Brett. Brett screwed Brett. And from that point on, wrestling literally changed. He was an on-screen character, but he was revealed to be the boss. He was revealed to be the owner of the company. He, all of a sudden, there was no President Gorilla Monsoon. It was the owner of the World Wrestling Federation, Vince McMahon, or Mr. McMahon. And it was all done in a real-life way of him screwing Bret Hart, not really screwing. I think he still did the right thing. I think Bret screwed himself over in the fact that he did it. go with the time-honored tradition of losing the title when your boss asks you to lose the title. So to me, that's what happened. To me, he really became the biggest villain in wrestling history that night. And the following night on Raw, it just continued over into the following night on Raw. And he became, like I said, I don't think anybody can argue that he is the biggest villain in wrestling history. And I know we said, we have to leave off Hulk Hogan turning on NWO. Like, honestly, that didn't even cross my mind for number one as far as excluding something. I thought we'd want to exclude this because I don't think of a more shocking moment, a more controversial moment, a more talked about moment in wrestling history than the Montreal Screwjob. There's nothing that has happened in wrestling, maybe the Chris Benoit horrible tragedy, but besides that, as far as the wrestling part of wrestling and being on television or being on pay-per-view or whatever you want to say, the Montreal Screwjob really was, if you put it in the form of an angle, the biggest angle ever to happen in wrestling. And it launched Vince McMahon's on-screen career for the last, what now, it's pushing 30 years, 35 years, going back and forth from good guy, bad guy, but mostly being a bad guy, and this is what kickstarted all of it. There wouldn't be heel general managers if it wasn't for this turn. There wouldn't be, even be general managers, I don't think. I think they'd still be sticking to whatever, the figurehead president. He kicked this notion off, and by putting all this heat on himself, was able to transform a company and transform an industry into what we see now. And I honestly don't see a bigger heel turn or a bigger moment in wrestling history than this.
As far as on-screen characters go, yeah, definitely, like you said, the going from the Raw announcer who, like you said, proclaimed all the rules and would tell the refs to get in there and break something up, and going to this villainous boss character that I don't think anybody knew that he even had in him, and almost for all intents and purposes launched the Attitude Era. Yeah, it's definitely shocking. Like you said, nobody really knew this was coming. It's playing again off of a real life event, and he turned heel off of it, and he launched, like you said, this whole, it was essentially the launch of Mr. McMahon, the launch of what would become the McMahon-Austin rivalry. And like you said, for now almost, it has to be close, I think probably even longer than 30 years, him being on TV and just taking this character and doing this. As far as backstage goes, you know, I always considered Mr. McMahon personally the face in this situation because, I mean, I don't know, as my take on the Montreal Screwjob has always been kind of what you said, Matt, is that, you know, Brett screwed Brett, and I don't care. I think I forgot who it was on his DVD that said this, but who cares where you drop the belt, whether it's in Canada, Detroit, East Johanga, wherever you want to talk about. You drop the belt when you're leaving the company. And I'll never forget when I'm reading his thing of just handing over the title the next night on Raw, saying he can't work there before. And who was I listening to? I forgot who it was that said this, but it's Jim Cornette who said this in a shoot interview. He said, "What if we're going to do that? Why don't you just basically let him, excuse my language here, sit down and take a piss in your mouth while he's doing it?" So, So backstage stuff, I always considered Vince McMahon the face in this situation, but obviously that's backstage politics, not on camera. On camera, obviously, like you said, nobody knew that Vince McMahon had this kind of character in him, and thank God he did, because I think I'd probably have to agree with your statement where he's probably the biggest heel in wrestling history. You can't really look back and say anybody in particular drew as much heat as he did or had such great chemistry with Steve Austin on TV like he did. I mean, we could go back to the 80s and 70s if you want to get really in-depth with it, but even then, I don't think anybody compares to the level or gets to the level that Mr. McMahon is at as far as an on-screen character goes. And then kind of almost piggybacking off that, my number one is going to be for the simple fact of that I think turning Stone Cold Steve Austin heel, who was the biggest face in your company for the last 3 years, is a pretty big shocker, especially when it was done at WrestleMania, done in his home state of Texas. Was the execution botched a little bit, but I think as far as the event itself actually happening, turning Stone Cold Steve Austin heel was something that I don't know if anybody ever thought they were going to do. Whether or not it was the right business decision, maybe that's to be debated, but I think in the actual moment itself, seeing Steve Austin sitting there in the middle of the ring with the WWF title, shaking hands with Vince McMahon, the guy he had just been feuding with for the better part of the last 2 to 3 years, is a pretty big shocking moment, especially when you consider that it happened on the WWE's biggest stage, which was WrestleMania. And here he is joining up with Vince McMahon. Obviously, it was a short-lived relationship, but I think just the entire moment of seeing Steve Austin turn heel, shaking hands with his arch nemesis, who many people consider was one of the greatest rivalries of all time, and all of a sudden joining forces with him, even if it was for the short time being, maybe if there was a little bit of better execution, the heel turning would have worked out a little bit better. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and then we got the whole Stone Cold joining the Alliance thing, which was kind of a bust as well. But I just think the whole moment of watching Steve Austin, the guy who had been your top star, your top babyface in the company for the last 2 to 3 years, shaking hands with the guy he had been feuding with, your top heel in the business for the last 2 to 3 years, is probably a pretty big shocking moment to everybody involved.
Yep, I can see that, and it was one of the things that popped into my head, too. But, again, I backtrack that to Vince McMahon debuting, debuting, but also turning as well. Debuting really more as an on-screen character compared to his babyface announcer, but even that seemed like a character, too, especially when you see him do interviews and have him talking nowadays. If that's what it felt like, it was he had his smiling blue jacket wearing Vince McMahon, the commentator, compared to Mr. McMahon, the heel manager. But it was on my mind when we were thinking up this list, and purely for shock value, absolutely. Absolutely, it was one of the shocking moments in WrestleMania history. And not the one I expected you to choose. I thought this would make somebody's list simply because of the ramifications of it and how big it was at the time. I expected you to choose Andre turning on Hulk Hogan, but I don't know if you thought that far back when thinking of this list.
I actually was thinking about that, but I kind of wanted to go more with something that I lived through and was a part of. I unfortunately was not born during the Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan thing, so I didn't really want to go too much into it. I was flip-flopping back and forth between all day as far as my number one was, and I kind of wanted to go with something that I witnessed as it happened and not something that I kind of read about going back in time and realizing how it happened. So that's my reasoning for putting Austin to turning heel as number one.
Okay, that makes sense. Considering how big of a Hulk Hogan fan you are, that's why I thought you would choose that. But for the sake of this top three and this show, I completely understand why you chose that one, and I would understand why anybody would choose that one. That is a big, big moment in WWE history. And unfortunately, it flops for the next how many months? Like for the next year, I think it pretty much flopped. The one time it actually seemed to be looking like it was going to be something good, it was when they had the two-man power trip with Austin and Triple H teaming together. That was one time where I really thought that this would work and wrestling fans would be able to accept Triple H. I mean, I he's the type of guy who's really never been accepted by smart marks or the internet wrestling community or whatever you want to call us. I've always been a huge fan of his, and when before I started writing and covering it, and I was when I was a kid, it was just all, it just always felt like Triple H can never do anything right. And this was the one time where it really felt that maybe, just maybe, both of these guys would get over huge as heels. And Triple H does and blows out his quad for the first time. And can't really blame him about, but it happened, and just so happened it happened like the first 2 weeks that this feud was, or this alliance was supposed to come together. And then you had Core Austin going off and singing to McMahon and doing that weird ass paranoid Stone Cold character that I don't think anybody really wants to go back and relive. If I want to see a heel Steve Austin, I go back to WCW and watch old stunning Steve Austin footage. Well, put on some Hollywood Blondes or put on some old Steve Austin TV title matches, and you'll get an awesome heel Steve Austin. But as far as the Stone Cold character goes, no, I don't think he ever should have turned heel. But for that moment, yes, that was one of the most shocking heel turns. I just think it, longevity-wise, it might go down as one of the most infamous, too, because of how bad it played out.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think the worst part of the paranoid Stone Cold Steve Austin character is that it led us to the What chant, which is unfortunately 10 years removed from it, still almost as strong as it was. Not as strong as it was.
It's about 20 years now. Because
yeah,
that was, WrestleMania 20 was 2004. He turned at WrestleMania 17, so that's 13. Okay. So,
yeah, if you're doing 30
yeah,
by 17,
so,
13 years.
Yeah. So 13 years of what chant? Yeah. I won't go back to my number one, but I don't know if anybody, if I ever told a story on this show or not, but I was watching a show, I was at a Raw in Hartford, Connecticut. It was right around the time that Vince McMahon turned full heel and was really embracing it on screen. And it might have been the Raw that Edge debuted. I don't remember. But I remember I was sitting in the audience with my dad, and we're sitting there, and we were in the first row above the seats, above the floor seats. So we were kind of elevated over people, and we were kind of like eye level with the people that were behind the hockey rink boards and that type of area. And watching the show, McMahon's trying to cut a promo. Really can't hear anything that's going on. But next to us, we saw there's a bunch of college guys who are tossing around and batting around a beach ball. Well, security comes over, and instead of just saying, hey, can just deflate this or I'll deflate it and just put it away, and because there was a bunch of college guys, he grabs the ball and just pops it as he walks by them and just storms off. And all the guys just started looking at him and just started calling him an asshole and chanting asshole at him. And then next thing you know, the entire crowd picked it up, thinking that it was directed at Vince. And thus, the asshole chant was born. And people I've been chanting that for years upon years, especially at Vince McMahon, when originally it was directed at a security guard at the Hartford Civic Center, and I swear to God, I've even talked to Kevin Kelly about this, who was with the company at the time, and he said the same thing. He didn't know where it came from, but that was the birth of the asshole chant. If you ever go back and try to see where it first kicked off, that's where it kicked off, and it didn't have anything to do with Vince McMahon whatsoever, but he was just lucky enough to be in the ring at the time, and that's who it stuck with. I just think that was a fantastic thing that nobody really knows about, and it's lasted for so long, and it was so not intended to be that way. And I'm sorry, but it led to so many profane things on WWE television that they had to live through, and the poor censors at USA that eventually Spike TV has to deal with asshole chants for the last 10 to 15, 20 years now, and God, it was all a bunch of drunk-ass college guys that wanted to play with their baseball.
Oh, wow. That is a very good story. You learn something new every day. That is a pretty good story. I don't think I have anything. I don't have any kind of cool stories like that. I think my coolest wrestling story are just dealing with John Cena fans when I go there and boo him. That's the extent of my my wrestling things go. I can firmly say that one time I did catch a John Cena wristband and threw it back into the ring at him after the show was over, which got the ire of the John Cena fans around me, and I got some dirty looks for that. But that's as far as my cool wrestling stories go. So
I got way too many to take over the show, so I'm just going to stop now.
All right. So, you got anything else to add before we sign off here tonight, Matt?
I don't know. Just to let you guys all know, I will be attending the Raw after Money in the Bank. I was originally going to be going to Money in the Bank, but things kind of got screwed up around personal things around here. So I'm going to the Raw after Money in the Bank. I will be there live. I will be tweeting live. I'll be posting live on HTCWrestling.com. I'll be doing a whole live report. So if I don't get a chance to talk to you guys until that week or until the after that show, it is the day after Money in the Bank, so obviously there'll be a lot going on. I will be sure to be taking notes, and like I said, I will be in contact with anybody who wants to follow me at Matt Herrick, that's MATTHARRAK, and on Twitter, or if you just want to follow the HTC.com wrestling website, HTCWrestling.com, I should say, HTC.com will get you a great cell phone deal, maybe. But if you go to HTCWrestling.com, you'll be able to find all my coverage and anything I have to say about that, about the show going on, whether it be behind the scenes or stuff going on in the arena, anything you can think of, I will be sure to be posting it and getting you as many details as I can find, since they are in their home territory, even though they like to say they're coming home to New York City and they're based out of Stanford, but they're also in my home territory too. So I'll be trying to get some insider stuff for you and try to talk to a couple of my connections and see what I can get for you people, for you listeners, for you readers of the site, whatever I can get my hands on, I like to share with everybody. Hopefully, like I said, it will be a good show. We'll be hopefully getting a good pay-per-view the night before. So one way or another, there should be some newsworthy stuff going on, and I'll be sure to let you all in on it. As soon as I find something out or as soon as I learn of something, you will be the first to know after my wife, who will be with me. But besides that, that's all I have for you guys. Hopefully I'll be on on again next week. I don't know what plans are coming up, but if not, I will be on the week after with the Money in the Bank review and all good things Raw and WWE related. Who knows? I might get burned out this weekend watching TNA's Slammiversary, which I just found out is on Sunday on Father's Day. And I just want to kind of shoot my computer right now. But that's about it. I am done. So go right ahead and wrap us up. Or else I'm going to keep talking.
Okay. All right, yeah. I think Money in the Bank is actually a couple weeks away. So if we take a break off next week, like we've been doing during the summer, 1 week on, 1 week off, we'll be back in 2 weeks previewing Money in the Bank. So hopefully everybody, including Cam, can join us then. Same thing for me. I'll be posting regularly my Raw report and my other columns I do on htcwrestling.com. And real quick, I just want to personally mention we do have somebody new covering SmackDown for us on htcwrestling.com. My friend Heather, who is also a wrestling fan just like me, is going to start covering SmackDown for us. Hopefully one day we can get her on the podcast. I tried to get a hold of her once I found out Cam wasn't going to be on tonight to see if she could join, but she had other commitments. Kind of tough because we both work the same job, and she normally is the one who works Thursday nights. So hopefully there'll be a time in there that we can get her on the show. She can talk wrestling with us, do some of these top three lists. I know I always talk to her about it. Every time we got a list into it, she gives me. Oh yeah, and she gives me her ideas.
I was going to say her first article is up on the website. So if anybody wants to check it out, or she took over SmackDown 10 Thoughts. Justin, I know you're taking over TNA 10 Thoughts, so God bless you. And I took over the NXT 10 Thoughts or 7 Thoughts or whatever I can get out of an hour-long show.
Yeah. And hopefully, I don't even know if I can get through 10 Thoughts on TNA at this point. Let's just hopefully I can find at least, you know, two things to say about them before I want to throw my remote to the television. But as far as that goes, that is it for this week. Like I said, hopefully we will be back in 2 weeks' time to preview Money in the Bank, give our thoughts on the show, and then we will go from there. So until next time, this is Justin Sawanka signing off with Matt Herrick, and hopefully, like I said, Cam will join us in 2 weeks for the Money in the Bank preview show. But until then, this closing song goes out to somebody who's been employed for 7 years and unfortunately lost their job today. So, like I said, check out htcwrestling.com for all of our stuff, and we will see you in a couple weeks.
Yo, 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 yo. Pop a 40 and check your rollies. It's crime time.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn. We're bringing it, bringing it. Yo, no more Hollywood, nah. This is Hollyhood, yeah. And it's crime time, you scared? You probably should, I come from the streets, I was raised in the gutter, I run up on your mother for that bread and butter, mess around with these crooks, get your property took, robbing is my job, I get paid off the books, Marvin with my squadron,